I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touché.
You go right, you go right, you go left, you go right.
Touche. The political discourse in this country heating up. The Iowa caucuses are a week away. Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, and the other candidates are in heavy rotation on the political talk shows. Closer to home, the state of the state is, it's this week in Springfield, and Governor Rauner will address the people of Illinois without a budget. And in the wake of more troubling news about social service agencies shuttering and more cutting back. Not the best start to 2016 for Springfield, but who am I to say? Instead, let's let these two argue on this week's installment of Touché!
Touché.
Dave Lundy is a Democrat analyst. Chris Roebling, a Republican analyst. They battle every week here on The Download. And tonight, they're wearing armor. There's a lot going on, guys.
I brought my sword. I'm ready to do battle.
David has an umbrella, and he's holding it up as though it were a sword.
All right, so where should we start? I mean, Dave, where would you start? I mean, the question I have on the Democrat side of the aisle right now is Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton. I mean, we didn't get a chance to talk last week, but the idea that the polls continue to come out saying Bernie Sanders is surging ahead in Iowa and New Hampshire. We knew it would be New Hampshire, that kind of thing. But I mean, what does this say?
Well, you've got a real interesting thing that's happened since we last met. The gloves have come off in both parties. Donald Trump, Ted Cruz detente has completely broken down. Donald is going full jihad on Ted Cruz. And Hillary Clinton is not going full jihad on Bernie Sanders, but, let's just say her surrogates are invoking the S word.
Socialist?
Yes, socialist. I've been having this discussion with all of my friends to the left, which Chris may not recognize. I actually have quite a few friends to the left of me. Yeah. A socialist cannot be elected president of the United States.
We've got one
and
already.
It's time to stop pussyfooting around. See, they define Barack as a socialist, and as real socialists will tell you, he's a lousy socialist.
I've heard from socialists that he's more middle of the road.
Well, you guys ought to read up. You ought to read the...
What are we reading, Chris?
Radical in Chief, The Untold Story of American Socialism and Barack Obama, and it, by Stanley Kurtz, PhD, Anthropology, Harvard University.
Oh, well, if he has a PhD in Anthropology, my God, we should listen.
Let me tell you, it is the single best intellectual biography of Barack Obama written.
Let me ask you this, Chris. Obama on the Republican side, what do you think of Bernie Sanders?
Well, he's out of his mind. and he's he's never been a threat. He's never been allowed close to the grown-up table or, you know, the matches. And
he's also never been a Democrat.
That's exactly. He hasn't been a Democrat. And I give him credit for that, actually, because, you know, he found the Democratic Party too much of a sellout. And some of us at this table used to work for Public National Communist Radio. And we all remember what it was like when you were working for NPR or an NPR affiliate station. And you were getting calls from leftists saying,
you're so corporate.
Yeah, right. You're dominated by corporate interest. And well, that's exactly that's the base
well,
of
what
the
Bernie
Sanders
What do you stuff. Make of Bernie Sanders surging ahead of Hillary Clinton? That's the thing I want to know.
Well, I think that the polarization of the politia, right? Polarization.
Ding, 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 ding. Door word of the day. Politia.
Yeah, where you got to get a little bell for me.
We need a bell, man.
Yeah. There's some kind of... Anyway, polarization is the legacy of Barack Obama, and that is reflected on the left by Sanders and on the right by Trump. And that I believe, is... he has polarized the conversation in the country. It is to our great detriment. It is one of his enduring, in my opinion, injuries to America.
Well, let me ask you this about Bernie Sanders, Dave. There are a lot of Democrats that seem to be joining in and the Bernie Sanders surge because they say, you know what, he speaks the truth, he's truth to power. He seems to be talking about the things we want to be talking about. We see Hillary Clinton as way more of a centrist. What do you say to the fact that a lot of Democrats who voted for Barack Obama are saying, you know what, Bernie Sanders is probably the better bet?
Well, several things. First of all, Bernie Sanders has not pulled ahead of Hillary nationally, not by a long shot. There's another poll that just came out showing Hillary still has a strong double-digit lead. Even in Iowa, there's five polls that have come out in the last few days. Three of them show Hillary leading. Two of them show Bernie leading. So it's by no stretch a slam dunk. They're neck and neck in Iowa. I think it would be very helpful for Hillary to win Iowa, but I think she could win the nomination even if she loses Iowa and New Hampshire, because you look at where they go from there. And you've got South Carolina, you've got March 1, all the primaries and the industrial in the southern states, and then March 15th. It's hard to figure out kind of how Bernie puts it together after this. And plus, I think you should expect that this ramping up the temperature on, okay, come on, we've flirted, we've had our little fun, now it's time to get serious about who's going to be the better general election candidate. And when push comes to shove, I don't know anybody who thinks that Bernie Sanders is going to be the better general election candidate.
I think he's going to be a great general election candidate, and I hope he gets nominated by the Democrats.
Exactly. But
I want to tell you, it is. I agree with David that it is neck and neck in Iowa. And I think that Iowa is, first of all, let's start with one of the big important. The Democratic Party is very, very tied up with African-American votes. And there aren't many African-American votes either in Iowa
or
four. In New Hampshire. Right. And so these are atypical by Democratic standards. Secondly, Iowa is a terrible predictor of the Democratic nominee. The winner on the Democratic
side. And the Republican nominee.
Well, Republican is a little better, but not great. But Iowa Democrats don't frequently indicate the national nominee. Hmm. So
as opposed to President Santorum and President Huckabee.
And so you've got a situation out there in Iowa where they are neck and neck. It is going to be decided by turnout and, you know, fastidiousness, and that I think might be on Bernie's side because those people are really angry because they don't think that Obama is enough of a socialist. They don't. They think he's an imperial.
Now let me make the transition to the Republican Party, because Donald Trump has had this sort of dance with the traditional sort of standard GOP party, where you've seen, you know, or you've heard through the cracks that they want him out, they don't want him involved with the party, but he keeps winning poll after poll after poll, and I don't think he can win a poll, but you know, he's just at the top of
the
poll.
He's prevailing.
What do you say to that? I mean, as a conservative Republican who, you know, takes politics pretty seriously, I mean, do you see yourself being in a situation at a convention where you're like, Donald Trump for president? And Chris,
yes,
Roman,
Chris, what
your
do you say?
I hope that Trump does not prevail. On the other hand, I do have a lot of faith in the people and the voters and the primary voters. I think one of the biggest detours an organized party can take, Democrat or Republican or anything else, is to ignore its primary voters. And I think it's important for Democrats to listen to what's going on with Bernie, just like it's important for people like me to listen about what's going on with Trump. I've said that forever. And I don't think you should talk him down. He's doing a good job of that himself. I think he causes problems for himself. He also gets through a lot of this stuff. He's executed a tremendous mm-hmm. hit job on Ted Cruz over the last 10, 15 days. I said at the Lundy lunch, you know, last month that Cruz will win in Iowa. Doesn't look like Cruz might yet win in Iowa. We're not sure. But Trump has done a heck of a job of making him Canadian Cruz. And
let me ask you, Dave, the same question I asked Chris on the other side of the aisle. When you see what's happening at the GOP, I mean, as a Democrat, do you say, oh, this is great that they're going for Trump? Or you start getting a little sweat saying, you know, this is pretty crazy that he's winning like this and maybe trouble for a general election.
So, you know, you look at the theoretically, and theoretically you say, well, you could see how Trump could appeal to certain segment of Democrats who are just as angry, and you know, he's a plain spoken guy and so on. And then you look at what yesterday on Meet the Press, they put up the negatives for Cruz and Trump. And Cruz's worst number was negative 22% on one of the issues. Trump's best negative was negative 24. Hmm. His negative among African Americans is 71%. Among Latinos, it was 56%.
So he would rally a vote against him.
You know, I think that, well, a lot of people are anxious, but I keep pointing out we are in the territory of a subset of the most extremes on both parties in Iowa who are looking at this race, and it just, it's a heck of a way to pick a president. I mean, they've been consistently wrong for the last several elections on the Republican side. We've frequently been wrong on the Democratic side in Iowa, although not last time. Last time, in Iowa, they went for Barack Obama, followed by John Edwards, followed by Hillary Clinton. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that, look, there's a lot of game left to be played here, and I think that voters, the closer you get to an election, to them actually voting, the more serious they start to get, and they start to look at some of these real questions.
Let me ask you this. Sanders, Trump, who wins?
Trump.
Bloomberg.
I want to say this about New Hampshire and the Republicans, because I think this is not yet in view. and this is somewhat dependent on the dynamic coming out of Iowa, but in New Hampshire right now, according to Real Clear Politics, there is a cluster in second place, and it's pretty much within a margin of error, and that's Cruz and Kasich and Rubio. And they're sort of 10, 12.
Kasich got the Boston Globe nomination.
Right.
He did.
Endorsement, sorry.
So those guys are right in there next to each other, 10 to 12 or 13 points. And they're statistically inseparable at this moment in any meaningful sense. You see Iowa go one way or another. There's going to be people are going to start to say there's going to be huge pressure on the single digit people to get out. There will be huge pressure on the conservatives to unite. And we could see coming out of New Hampshire with Cruz, Kasich, and Rubio so close, yeah. Any one of them could be second to Trump, who now looks like he's commanding in
so
New
it's
Hampshire.
So it's almost important on the Republican side to come in second.
Well, you've got
essential.
You have essentially a chance to win the whole
thing. It's absolutely huge.
Let me make one other quick point before we go to break, which is that you're looking – whenever any analyst tells you, that, oh, well, if we look at the head-to-head numbers, Hillary does worse than Bernie Sanders does, and therefore Sanders would be the better general election candidate,
yeah.
That person should immediately be thrown out of the room and never allowed near a microphone again.
Well, I think you should toss him in the lake. And then,
see, I'm a Democrat. I'm more magnanimous. I'm just like, get him out of the studio. But here's the point. Bernie Sanders has not been vetted. He has not been identified by anybody. I mean, the people who are paying attention are you, me, Chris, and your listeners, hopefully. And a small subset.
Scores of thousands of listeners.
Scores,
and we hear from
scores hundreds, of thousands.
They all join David's Twitter feed immediately after every appearance.
But and this is true,
and
by
I'm
the way.
I'm lonely.
This is true
Fitzhenry
on both Trump
1105.
And Sanders.
Give me a look.
If you look at... I'm not going there, Mrs. Roebling. I didn't say it. That's Chris. It's not me. But if you look at the most fascinating number I've seen in the last few weeks is the amount of money that has been spent on television against Donald Trump. Of the almost $200 million in TV spending, approximately $2 million has been spent negatively against Trump.
How many of us hate our respective establishments? I really hate it. I mean, I hate those guys. I get to D.C. and I have a feeling of illness, really. I just cannot stand the D.C. Republican Beltway crowd. They are pretty much individually, they're great people, but collectively, they're utterly despicable. And they have, in many respects, I think, separated not just the party from its voters, but the government from its people.
Well, let's take a break. Dave Lundy, Chris Roebling, Touche. We're playing Touche. Okay, we come back. Let's talk a little bit about close to home.
Yeah.
The state of the state is this week. Bruce Rauner, big layoffs at the end of the week last week. The end of the social service group, the Lutheran Child and Family Services. We'll talk more about that on Touche when we come back. Stay with us.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay. I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right?
Touche.
Touche. Touche. Playing Touche. It's the weekly political segment here with Dave Lundy and Chris Roebling as
Woof.
We bounce and benty about as the topics of the day. So, before we get to the state stuff, why don't we hit before the news just some miscellaneous.
Yeah.
Today was a big day for politics. A couple stories from some big media outlets about not only, looking back at weapons of mass destruction, which are back in the news, but also the indictments of two, I guess you would call them advocates?
Yeah.
Anti-abortion advocates who...
Zealots.
Who were the ones who doctored the tapes or the videos, allegedly, of the Planned Parenthood selling body parts stuff. Yeah.
Right. So that story has always been much ado about not a lot. And a grand jury in Texas, a nice liberal grand jury in Houston, Texas, was tasked with looking at all of the aspects of that and coming out with indictments if they were appropriate. And of course, everybody on the right thought, well, they're going to indict Planned Parenthood for violating federal law and all this other stuff. Well, lo and behold, they came out with an indictment today and they completely exonerated Planned Parenthood and they indicted the videographers, the zealots, for violating a variety of laws. But the key point is, frankly, I don't care about those people. What I care about is the fact that the reactionary right continues to try to demonize Planned Parenthood in any way humanly possible. And every time it comes down to the facts support Planned Parenthood. They were not selling body parts. They were donating for medical research and getting reimbursement for their expenses. It only happened in two states.
Is it ideology that the conservatives go after Planned Parenthood, or does Planned Parenthood, not unlike the unions, give a lot of money to the Democratic Party?
Yeah, I think it's both. With respect to my friends on the right, there are those who believe that abortion is murder, period, full stop. And so anything that is in support of abortion, regardless of the fact that abortion is a tiny, tiny fraction of the number of services Planned Parenthood performs.
That's untrue.
It's not untrue,
on any
Chris.
Basis. On
it
any
is not
on
untrue.
On any fiscal basis. But you go ahead and finish your diagram.
Chris, you're, making up facts.
I do get a couple of seconds.
Making up facts.
No, you go ahead.
No, the under any stretch of the imagination, it's a small number of the services. Follow the English language. Yes, the number of the
services.
It's not a misrepresentation. This is what Planned Parenthood has said all along.
Planned Parenthood
is a tiny percentage of the services that Planned Parenthood performs for women in this country. And for many women, it's the only opportunity they have to get certain types of health care services.
Well, I mean, that's a complete distortion. And that's what you get from the supporters of Planned Parenthood, because they don't want to embrace the fact that Planned Parenthood is an abortion mill funded by the taxpayers, and because they are, in fact, selling. They're first harvesting and then selling infant body parts, I mean, fetal body parts. And they are doing this not in accordance with federal law. Now, I don't know the facts. I'm working for a living, and I haven't read the whole thing. I don't know if this was a state or a federal grand jury, and I don't know exactly what was before it. I can tell you this. I don't know, because I don't know the facts down there in Houston, I'm not going to comment on what that Planned Parenthood did, but across the country, you had Planned Parenthood in all kinds of conversations talking about the trading of fetal body parts for cash. And they were doing so in absolute apparent prima facie violation of federal law and regulation, which I know David and the pro-abort left doesn't really care about when it's time
pro-abort.
To.
I haven't heard of
yes, that. Which, by the way, included his front runner for the presidency up until 7 years ago.
Whatever that means. In any case,
Donald Trump.
What we are talking, he's not my front runner. I do not support Donald Trump, so you can't hang him on me.
I will for the next year.
What is going on here is, and I don't know what those individuals did and what the facts were that underscored their apparent indictment, okay? But I will tell you that there are no Americans support harvesting and illegal sale of fetal body parts.
Correct. Neither
and
do
that
I.
That is what Planned Parenthood and its Democrat enablers are guilty.
All right, let's leave it there. Let's leave it there, because we're going to go back and talk about the state and Governor Rauner's state of the state. Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy, Touche here on the Download. Stay with us.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
Well, that's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche. You go right.
Am I the Vince Vaughn? I want to know. I want to be Vince Vaughn.
I think you might be. I think you have a little bit of Vince Vaughn, a little bit of Ben Stiller in that one. I think you both.
I kind of have a little more of a Ben Stiller thing going.
Yeah. Dave Lundy, Chris Roebling. We're talking politics. Touche. As we move to the local level, the state level. Let's talk about Springfield, because the state of the state is this Wednesday. And it's somewhat delicious in the way that we're going to have a state of the state after nothing really got done the entire year of 2015.
The state of the state is god-awful. I have to tell you, the governor just continues to amaze with the way he's conducting himself. Last week, he had his big moment in the sun. His coup was when he was going to announce that he and John Cullerton, Senate President John Cullerton, had agreed on a pension reform approach. But the press immediately noticed John Culleton wasn't at the press conference, and the governor could not help himself. So not only did he announce the things that John Culleton and he agreed on, which apparently there is some areas of agreement, he then went way beyond, started throwing bombs towards the unions and saying things about collective bargaining and a bunch of stuff that John Culleton had never agreed to. And he snatched defeat from the jaws of victory, a moment where he could have actually put a wedge between Madigan and Culleton, which is what he's been trying to do all year.
Chris,
this is just not going well.
Is Governor Rauner a political novice? Would you say that? Because that's how Dave's sort of setting it up, that he's politically putting his feet in his mouth.
No, I think that Rauner is a guy who knows policy, and he knows exactly what's wrong with the state of Illinois, and he's demanding change, and so did all of the people who voted for him. And, you know, the problem in Illinois is not Governor Rauner's, you know, ability to impress David Lundy, as important as Lundy is. That's not the issue around this state. The issue in this state really comes down to one thing, that when you go to the state rep election results, you've got about 50% Democrat and 50% Republican. But when it's within about 1 or 2 points either way.
Or 3 or 4 or 5.
Then you go down to Springfield and you take one look at the state house, and because of the just abject gerrymandering by Mike Madigan to strengthen his majority, you've got this enormous disparity.
And I'm sure you have the same outrage in Ohio and Pennsylvania and Michigan.
Well, if I move there, I'm going to get outraged.
Where Democrats have more votes than Republicans, and Republicans have 12 to Democrats 5.
To give you an idea of how bad Madigan is, go to IllinoisLeaks.com. My friends, the Edgar County Watchdogs, are pulling back the veil on a guy named Frank Martino. David said before the program, nobody knows who Frank Martino. That's the point. He's the Illinois Auditor General. His name is Frank Martino. And if you go to IllinoisLeaks.com, Edgar County Watchdogs, you are going to see just the kind of person Mike Madigan puts into a place of
see
trust.
How much this guy
and the
eats.
Reason
this
that I didn't think it was worth talking about during our few moments
horrible.
On the air was because Lutheran Social Services of Illinois just got decimated last week. Are you kidding me?
No, the Democrats did that.
Are you kidding me?
I'll tell you
Bruce why. Bruce Rauner refuses to do a budget until the Democrats do something he doesn't have the votes for.
Time out. The Democrats could have passed a budget
they could
six
not.
Months ago.
We keep going through this. They do
the
not
Democrats
have 71
have
votes for a tax increase. They don't.
Well, fine. Then they can reduce their tax increase until they get their 71 votes.
Rauner
Why
will not give them
not
anything until... Because Rauner will not give them
you,
anything
look,
until
a,
he, we pass right to work.
But the point is, you guys don't
term
need
limits,
Rauner.
Redistricting. That's nonsense.
You don't need Rauner. You
that
can
is not.
Make
so let me get this
budget.
Straight. You want Democrats to pass something
no,
with
Democrats,
no Republican votes, even though there are Democrats who will never
this is
vote
so
for
weird.
This.
This is so weird. I want Democrats to stand up and be counted for the tax raises
oh,
that they want to
me.
Impose.
Rauner has said he will
of,
give
of
you tax increases.
And I'm being objective because
yes,
I've heard both arguments.
We know you are.
But you know, take me through the last year, because wasn't there an income tax on the books that Bruce Rauner rolled back when he came into office?
That was passed by the Democrats with a pack of lies that it would solve our immediate issues. That it would pay down our debt. Our debt now is our immediate debt, our sort of 60, 90, 120 day debt is bigger than it was when we passed the
yes,
tax.
Yes, because the tax increase expired.
Because the Democrats
because the tax
took
increase
the taxes
expired.
And spent them on
no, the
other
Democrats
issues.
Took the taxes and spent them on pension payments
Look,
for the first time
you're not
in decades.
To your own facts.
Well, you're making up your own facts, Chris.
The reality
Democrats...
is the Democrats couldn't wait to impose taxes because that's
touche.
That is the answer to every question for the Democrats.
Because we do not have enough money to pay
no,
our bills.
It's because you cannot get enough money from
no,
the public
it's because,
employee unions. Public employee unions have ruined life in America, and they have to be extirpated. I'm not kidding. What they have to do
those
is just
darn
like,
teachers.
It's just
they're
like,
ruining our lives.
I've used this before. The socialists in Sweden say never, ever in Sweden are public employee unions allowed to contribute to political campaigns. They look at you like you got three heads when you say, oh, an Illinois public employee, SEIU.
I love that Chris is citing Sweden as a model for
well,
governance.
Because you are your socialist leader for the Democratic nomination, Bernie Sanders, is going to bring Swedish practices even here to Illinois.
Oh, good God. Lord help us.
All right. Well, it's... There is an argument on both
sides.
See,
Chris and I are really timid about this.
No, but I mean, it's interesting because both are finger pointing and
well, can I wait. Yeah. Before the finger pointing, yeah. I want to just state a fact. I am a director of Haymarket Center, which is one of the greatest substance abuse prevention and treatment and detox centers in the world, mm-hmm. on the near west side of the city of Chicago. Great story. Haymarket is beautiful. Haymarket has about a $21, $22 million a year budget. The state of Illinois, under Rod Blagojevich, Pat Quinn,
right?
John Cullerton, Emil Jones, and Mike Madigan,
Paige
was
Phillip,
into
George
us.
Ryan.
No, not under those guys. Was into under the 12 years of total Democrat control. They extracted loans from us of $3.5 to $4 million on the balance sheet.
What do you mean they extracted loans?
They refused to pay us. That means they were borrowing money from us. We were acting like a lender to the state of Illinois.
That's a lot of
and that's what happened to Lutheran Social Services. Right. And then this guy Rauner gets himself elected because people are outraged over stuff like that.
But the question
he goes
I have,
to
the
Springfield
question,
and David says he's
no,
the cause
no,
of
no,
all
no,
the problems.
No. But the question I have is I am totally with you on the idea that, you know, there's obviously compromise and there's two ways to look at this story. But right now is not the time to necessarily push an agenda to say no collective bargaining, do this, do that.
When will that ever be under these guys?
Well,
never.
Maybe
never.
If the governor
there
actually
any sort of
won
compromise that
something.
Could happen in any form
there
in the state
are,
of Illinois.
There are, has, well, hang on, you've been filibustering. There are compromises that could be had in the state. There would be compromises on workers' comp. Today, the Democrats said that there could be compromises around collective bargaining. Believe me, I know a lot of Democratic managers under Democratic governors who hated having the fact that 95% of their workforce was unionized. There are compromises to be had, but the governor doesn't want compromise.
No, that's not
he
true.
He wants capitulation.
That is not
his
true.
His version
that's
of compromise is the same as George W.
That's
Bush.
Not, that's not
compromise
true.
With that's me posturing. Meaning do what I said.
David
it's
was
not
fine.
Posturing.
No, David was fine up until he started posturing, but I want to tell you that a couple of quick things. Number
I
one,
was fine
I,
always.
I want to say, Rauner has negotiated against himself, and I think that's a sign of reasonability down through the months. Also, Madigan, I was with Madigan when he spoke at the City Club. He has compromised on a couple of issues. There's more compromise going on, but it's not helpful for either side with respect to their basis. That's point number one. Point number two, so there's a lot more going on than it meets the eye. Point number two is this. Honest engine, hand on a Bible, whatever you want to say.
Did he really just say that?
David and I, seriously, with you
and
Justin,
Donald Trump will get along well.
David and I could sit down and with one legal pad and two sharp pencils,
right.
The two of us could solve this in an afternoon, less than an afternoon.
So what's the holdup?
Politics.
Great.
Okay. I mean, I believe it is, given the fact that the Democrats subsist as a subsidiary and fee simple owned by the public employee unions, it's their fault.
And it has nothing to do with the fact that the governor is insisting on policies he does not have the votes for.
The taxpayers.
This is a democracy. He doesn't have the votes.
But
that's why he has accomplished nothing. He's passed nothing. And even his Republican colleagues, his Republican governors, Republican members of the legislature are freaking out over what's happening because they got to go back to their district and say, why is that social service organization in my community closing? Because the governor refuses to talk about the budget. Jim Edgar's called him out on this. Hell, Leslie Munger has called him out on this. Thompson's called him.
No, she hasn't.
Yes, she
no,
has.
No, they haven't.
The budget.
I want to tell you something. The Democrats are representing the union. The Republicans are representing
I'm
the taxpayers.
I'm not representing the union.
That's all the Democrats are representing, all of the unions. The Republicans are representing the taxpayers. That's what.
Which
folks,
is why they have 47 out of 118
driving,
votes.
If you are driving in your car right
so
now
good.
And you're listening, if you're in the sound of my voice and you pay taxes, the Republicans are representing you. And David is representing all of the unions, the evil
And if you're in the sound of his voice, cover your ears
Touché.
Because if you have impressionable children.
Touche! That comes to an end. Get back to your corners. That's a touche. That's what we're going for. Chris Roebling and Dave Lundy getting at each other.
In this giddy up.
Weekly segment we do, Touche, here on Monday nights. Till next Monday, guys. Thanks for coming in.
See you next Monday.
I love it. And Patrick Kane is going to be on a Steve Cochran show tomorrow. Big week for him. Gets a little Patrick Kane early in the week, then goes out to the Egg Harbor Cafe on Friday. Nice. I love that segment. That was good stuff, man. That's the call. They just left the studio here on Michigan Avenue, and the two of them walked past the window, and I waved to say, hey, see you guys later. And they both were gesturing loudly at each other, arguing.
Just yelling at each other.
They're just like, still, I don't see why you don't see it. Here's some of the comments we got. We got a lot of texts, and I didn't get to them. I should incorporate these. We just run so tight on time. My favorite one was 630 says, this is like Thanksgiving without the food. Too much fun. 708 says, how much money is Rauner paying your guest? 847 says, where's the money from the last tax raise? Where's the money the Democrats pilfered out of the pension fund for years? That's what Chris was saying. Sounds like your guess is 708 has never stepped foot in a Planned Parent office. That's probably true. Not going to lie to you. That's probably true. Let's see. 815 says, please ask what happened to the millionaire's tax that we, the people of Illinois, voted for. 630 says, this is a disgusting show. Me and you, we may have a different opinion of what the word disgusting, but I don't think it was that disgusting. And 630 says, are these boys still in middle school? I love it. It's the more they get at each other, and they get mad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can tell.
If you watch the webcam, like, there's a point where Roebling gets up at one point in this conversation when Dave's talking. And I don't know if it's, like, stress or, like, the idea of arguing in front of you, but I just start to laugh. I just really like, it's just really comical watching the two of them go at each other. I mean, they have good points, and they represent their parties well, their viewpoints well, but
they're passionate. They're both passionate.
It does. It's a good point. It reminds you of Thanksgiving. Like, and I've got this innate, I guess it would be skill, that when two uncles start yelling at each other about politics, that I just kind of become like out of body experience watching and laughing at the theater of the experience. So maybe that's,
I mean, it is theater, because yeah, like Chris Roebling, he'll make his point, very feel very good about it, and then like kind of push himself away from the desk, like, yes, nailed it. Like, what do you got? Yeah, what do you got
chairs,
for me?
The chairs are on rollers.
So fun.
That's so good. That's his move. I want to do at all meetings. And there's the third quarter report. How you like me now? Tomorrow, if you're going to an office job, you should try that move. If you're on a roll chair and you have to make some sort of quick presentation or report to people at the table, try that move. I think that's a smart.
It's a good one.
It is. People will respect you right away. They're like, either that or a slow clap. Always works really well.